The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
So it's not just those people out there who have an identity crisis. And it's not just we, the marriage educators, who have it all figured out. Rather, we need to recognize we're in one big human family, one big boat called the human race, and the human condition in its fallen, broken state is in a constant state of identity crisis. We don't know who we are. Christ enters into this human crisis, and these words are decisive. In the midst of fallen human history, haven't you read, Jesus says, that in the beginning, God made them male and female.
The Drew Mariani Show on
Relevant
Radio.
That, of course, the great words of Christopher West speaking at the Smart Loving Conference last year. He gave a talk on why gender matters, right? Why God created you male or female, right? That's what's missing from this conversation, isn't it? I sit back and I caught a news story this morning, and I say this to you all the time. I hate to talk about this. I really don't even want to talk about this, but I've got to bring some clarity to you. I've got to bring some clarity to this issue. Governor Newsom did something that just, I thought, why? It makes no sense. When you take God out, you know, out of your life, there's chaos, and this is the chaos. Yeah, God created us either male or female, period, right? And you don't think that silliness of gender confused craze, and this is wild. I know there are people who legitimately have a gender confusion, and I'm very compassionate, and my heart goes out to anyone who has that. I hope they get the help that they need. But this has become a craze in our culture today, and I'm telling you, it's getting worse. It's almost like it's, I don't know, cool to be on this. They think it's cool to be on what they think is the right side of the issue. I think you're only fomenting, continuing to breed even greater confusion in the culture, and even people who are on the edge, you know, getting sucked into that. The state of California, here's what's going on. Governor Gavin Newsom, he signed into law a bill that requires large retail stores to sell toys that have gender-neutral toy aisles. Now, I'm thinking, why do you need gender-neutral toy aisles, right? I mean, stores like Walmart and Target and other retailers, if you have more than 500 employees, you're not allowed to put those dolls in, you know, you can't put them separately. You can't put the dolls on a shelf so the girls can see the Barbies and all the dresses and the glitter. You can't, you know, you can't put them there with the dump trucks, you know, where the boys can find, you know, their cap guns and their dump trucks and all the things the boys like to play with, right? Let me just share with you what the law reads, and I'll explain what's going on here. Here's what the law reads. A retail department store that offers child care items or toys for sale shall maintain a gender-neutral section or an area that shall be labeled at the discretion of the retailer in which a reasonable selection of items and toys for children that it sells shall be displayed regardless of whether they have been traditionally marketed to either boys or girls. Okay, it's a mouthful, right? So what's that all mean? Well, first of all, if you don't follow what all that means, you get fined. You know, you're going to get a $250 fine for the first violation, $500 thereafter. So what it means is that, you know, you can have boys sections, girls sections, but you need a gender-neutral section. And I'm just sitting back here, and I'm thinking to myself, just, you know, rationally, logically, what's so wrong if there is a parent that has a gender, you know, a child with a little bit of gender confusion, and the boy wants to play with glitter? Why can't he go to the other aisle and just pick up the glitter? You know, what if there's a girl who, you know, wants to play with the dump truck or the cap gun, you know, or whatever it is? Why can't they just go to the aisle and pick it up? Why do you have to mandate? Why do you have to threaten with fines? You know, the fact that you have to have this gender-neutral aisle. You know, it's to me, it's just absolutely silly. It's the government, once again, getting in the business of a private retailer. You're going to tell me how I have to present, market, and what I've got to do? What if I don't want to sell the products? Or what if I do? And I because, you know, my bottom line is important to me, I want to feature them in a specific way. You're saying, no, you have to have a specific aisle. So the bill was brought forward by an assemblyman, a guy named Evan Lowe, who told the LA Times, he says, look, part of it is to make sure that, in the case of what I was saying, if a young girl, You know, you can find a police car or a fire truck or, you know, a periodic table or a dinosaur. And then similarly, if you're a boy and you're more artistic and you want to play with glitter, well, why not? Why should you feel the stigma saying, oh, you know, this should be shamed and go to a different location? I think that's a leap, right, by this guy. I do. I think it's a leap. It's kind of silly. My wife, Kathy, pointed out to me that there's nothing that stops a parent from buying that toy dinosaur for their daughter or the doll for their son. And parents can, they're the ones who are paying for it, right? So, I mean, I don't get that. Of course, given that this is for large retailers, more than 500 employees, you can expect them to roll over and just say, okay. And if this was targeted at smaller stores, I wonder what would happen, right? I don't expect that you're going to be able to stay out of the limelight for that long, because I think the big stores are going to come in the crosshairs. And then, you know what? You know how the culture wars works. You're next. If you have a smaller store, you're the little guy, you're going to get forced at some point in time to go along. You know, I thought, let's talk about this for a little bit. And again, I want to be charitable. I want to be kind. But what looms in the future? Why is this necessary? And how does this reflect on where we are as a nation? Is it just simply the administration? Is it simply a liberal state? Or are we seeing a change in the culture? And there's nobody better than both a news and cultural analyst than James Hershen to join us. He's a New York Times bestselling author. He's a law professor. He writes the Left Coast Report column for Newsmax.com. You can check him out there. Follow him also on Twitter. I think you'll appreciate him. He's pretty diverse. At the Jim Jams. All right. His website, JamesHershen.com. James, good to have you back again. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Yeah, you know, look. This gender-neutral toy problem had to be addressed. I mean, in Southern California, we look out at the ocean, and we see container ships sitting out there with supplies that cannot be delivered and a supply chain that's broken down. We see homeless tents everywhere, human feces, piles of hypodermic needles. But we've got to deal with the priority. Gender-neutral toy aisles. That's what's important. I mean, of course, I'm being sarcastic, but
of course,
it's you know, what is the meaning of this right now? It's really difficult to find any reasonable explanation for this. The movement that is pushing the fluid gender kind of approach is undermined by the bill, because every large retail has to first recognize that there are two traditional genders, that they have to divide things up and determine what would qualify and represent those genders. In other words, to find out what gender neutrality is, you have to determine what kind of toys have a specific gender. So you mentioned, you know, the stereotypical answer is, well, yes, if it's glitter, it's a Barbie doll, or it's a toy truck. The toy truck is blue in blue packaging, and the Barbie doll is in pink packaging. So now we have to create an aisle, which it really is kind of vague what the gender neutral aisle is. Some retailers are going to mix them and you know, make them sort of chaotic. Others are going to put products that have no appeal to a gender. But the whole thing is not based on any need that the citizens have, that any constituency group has. The only possible explanation is that Governor Newsom and the legislature of California are pandering to a community that donates a lot of money, and that that is the organizations, the far radical kind of organizations, LGBTQ organizations, who generally are pushing a fluidity, non-binary, multiple genders approach. And this one requires the retailer to divide up into the two genders, because they're still going to have a boy toy aisle and a girl toy aisle and a third gender neutral aisle. And it's going to it's going to be hashed out to see how this qualifies. The law uses words like, well, a reasonable accommodation. And the courts are going to have to define what that is. It creates a mess, extra expenses for the retailers, confusion for parents who, as you pointed out, it's the parents that buy the toys. And we used to have a thought that businesses who are in business that are privately owned would decide how to display their merchandise.
Right. Exactly.
And that the free market, not right. the government, would decide what's sold and what's not. But that this is it's a pandering approach. But the real problems is that, you know, people used to argue and say, well, why are you worried about a slippery slope? There's no such thing as a slippery slope. I used to be on Bill Maher's old show, Politically Incorrect, all the time. And Bill Maher would say, there's no slippery slope. And of course, now we know, since we've fallen over the cliff, we know that slope is very real on every single issue. So where does this lead? Where does the legislature, aptly named Low, where is he going to take us?
Hey, so James, just you're an attorney, and I'm going to go to the phones in a second. If you're on hold, I'll grab your calls. So stay with me. But legally, I mean, this is a private business, right? How can they come in and say you've got to take a product that you're selling, you're buying it, you're going to make a profit on it, and display it in X fashion? You have to dedicate an aisle, you know, your real estate, your floor space. You've got to do this. Is that legal to do? I mean, how can you get away by telling a private, you know, vendor what they have to do when it comes to the display of a product?
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be litigation on that subject, but I have to start by saying there's all kinds of government overreach happening, especially since we justified some of this government overreach because of health reasons and medical reasons. And so we live in a climate where there's a lot of illegality by government. Some of it is being tested in the courts right now. So I think that this will be something that's tested, and initially it'll be in the California courts, but it could very well go into the federal court. And we could be talking about constitutional issues, because unlike the orders that are affecting retailers that have to do with the pandemic, who is it actually that we're protecting by requiring retailers to have a gender neutral aisle? In other words, who is damaged by these non-gender neutral toys being displayed? I think there's a pretty strong argument. No one was being hurt.
No one was
being damaged.
I think you're right. I think it's kowtowing or bowing to the lobby that's helping to support this campaign and that agenda. Let's move along. We'll go to Dean in Stockton, California. He wants to join the conversation. Hi, Dean. You're on the air with James Herson. Good afternoon.
Thank you. I agree with everything that's being said, so I'm not disagreeing with anything. I'm just thinking that one short-term benefit of having a neutral aisle is that a boy that's attracted to some things that are traditionally girls and a girl that's attracted to something that's traditionally boys won't have to physically cross over to the other section and then think, well, maybe I need to transition into that sexual group. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, I think I get the point, James. You pick up on that, but it's kind of a leap, though, isn't it? I mean, how old are these kids? How old are the products? And by buying the police car or the fire truck, I guess Dean's point is that it'll make those people want to maybe force them, make them want to transition over to that group. I would think that there's already a lot of confusion as it is, and having an aisle is not going to diminish that.
Yeah, no, and I think I understand what Dean is saying. And Dean is looking for, you know, the positive in this. But the problem is the basic premise is wrong. The basic premise is that somehow display of toys compels people to buy them or compels people to feel a certain gender. And that's never been the case. As a matter of fact, in retail stores, and we're talking about stores like Target and Walmart, the larger retailers, I mean, obviously, each aisle is filled with shoppers of all genders, all age groups. And it's, and what people do is, you know, they go on a search, and if they can't find the product, they ask for help. And I just, I can't believe that a child is going to be impacted in some way depending upon which aisle the toy they would like to get is located. So I actually think it helps create confusion, because if a little girl wants to buy a truck, she would go to the section where all the trucks are, which is not labeled boys only. It's not labeled that way. Yeah. It's the toy section. And usually the trucks are right across the aisle from the Barbie dolls. And by making this into an issue, I think it just creates chaos. It creates more expenses for the retailers, and it makes it more difficult for people to find things. It kind of reminds me, in California, the same place that has all these problems that I talked about, we have the wildfires, we have just terrible problems, forestry management. They banned plastic straws. You remember that?
Right, I do, yep.
And we go into a restaurant now, and this is unbelievable, Drew, and they give us paper straws, because paper straws are biodegradable, and they don't, you know, cause any problems. But what are the paper straws wrapped in?
Plastic.
You know, it's insane. Damn. It's insanity. And we see this kind of thing all the time, where because of some sort of they'll describe it as noble goals, but it ends up not being that noble in practice. And so what I'm worried about is where this leads to, because we're talking about children, and we're talking about children's products. And one of the things, you know, you opened the show with the idea that, hey, wait a minute, it's not toys that pressure young children to feel a certain way. It's the way they were created by God. Yeah. As a matter of fact, when you try, for example, to take toy guns away from little boys, what you end up seeing is little boys biting their toast into the shape of a gun and having gunfights with toast or with their finger, their index finger. There's a natural hardwired inclination towards gender-oriented behavior that happens to be placed in human beings by He who created human beings. And until we can accept that, we're not going to be able to have any kind of health involved in the attitudes toward gender.
My guest today is James Hurst. I only have him for a few minutes. I'll grab a few more calls. And a lot there, James. I'm with you. I was just sitting here as you were talking about the displays. You have the boys' aisle, the girls' aisle. Are you going to put the glitter, the Barbie, the police truck, the fire truck, whatever it is? Do you have to have two of those products and put them on that gender-neutral aisle? I mean, how do you discern what's gender-neutral and what's not, and what belongs in a girl aisle and what belongs in a boy aisle? To me, it just becomes very confusing. And why do we do this? I think also it's just to once again make normal and make mainstream, make acceptable this idea that somebody could have this gender fluidity and that this is mainstream and correct. To your final point there, as you were pointing out, no, God made us male, He made us female. And this is only exacerbating and creating, I think, greater confusion. Denise in Illinois, I know you've been waiting for a while. Good afternoon. You're on the air with James Hurston.
Is this me, Denise?
Yes, Denise. Yeah, good afternoon.
Thank you. I absolutely love your topic. I recently watched Dave Chappelle and his whole commentary about transgender, and he's getting ridiculed right and left by that community. He referred to the alphabet mafia, the LGBTQ, LSD, BLM, you name them. They have their identities out there, and they're very clear what their political agenda is. He made reference to the fact that he feels those organizations are stifling black men, and especially conservative black Christian men. Like, they have no place in society anymore, nor do Christians. I feel, and he made a reference to the fact of George Floyd, I can't breathe. I'm starting to feel like I can't breathe because I am being inundated with these agendas from these organizations. And I have grandchildren and children, and I feel this is wrong. I don't force my faith, my heritage on anybody, even though this is Christopher Columbus Day, and now it's also Indigenous Day. So I lost my Italian Heritage Day, which my grandfather paid a huge price to be honored for. I have to destroy that. I have to deny that. But I have to embrace the alphabet mafia and all of their agenda, and that is wrong.
All right, Denise, thank you. Let me hold you on that point. I want James to respond to you as well. James, we only have a couple moments left, so let's
sure.
A lot there, and glad, then some final thoughts.
I'm glad
for me
to hear Dave Chappelle's name brought up a couple of nights ago. There was an event at the Hollywood Bowl. 18,000 people, many of them insiders from Hollywood. Dave Chappelle referenced the alphabet mafia and the way he's been targeted by the cancel culture. And when he finished his first opening, 18,000 Hollywood, most of whom were liberals, gave Dave Chappelle a standing ovation.
Wow.
We are the majority in this country. This alphabet mafia pretends to be a large group. They are a small group relative to the bulk of America. America is still a Judeo-Christian nation with Judeo-Christian values. And we just do not have to succumb to these values that they would like to force on us. As a matter of fact, perhaps it would be a good thing for the citizens of California to avoid purchasing any item that is displayed in the gender-neutral aisle. That might be a good thing because they keep track and inventory of what's sold and what's not. We are proud of the God-created genders. And, you know, and we don't have to live in a world of multiple pronouns. Right. We can just use the ones that our parents taught us when we were little kids.
Let me sneak another call in here before we have to wrap it up here. Paula is listening in Illinois. Hi, Paula. Good afternoon. I understand you have 11 children.
I do.
Hey.
I do, yeah. Yeah, I have
God bless you.
Wow, what a mix. That's awesome.
Yeah, so I completely agree with everything you guys are saying. I just had to call and just say that I grew up in a family of four girls. And when I had my first son, I thought, really, God? Like, I don't know what to do with a boy. Like, this is, you know, I know girls. I don't know anything about boys. And I was so, you know, they wanted a gun and they wanted all these, you know, fun fighting toys. And I thought, no, I want them to be nice young boys. And sure enough, you know, the paper towel holder becomes a gun and they chew a piece of toast into the shape of a gun and all these things. So I think, you know, this is all insanity. But if we just kind of take it with a grain of salt and keep that good communication with your children. And, you know, we just got to ride this out together. But I just had to chuckle that I think our children will just be children. They'll be who they're supposed
Amen.
To be.
Hey, Paula, thanks. I appreciate it.
Amen.
You know a lot about boys now. You have seven of them. So
keep I
up
do.
The good
wow.
work. Seven boys, four
have,
girls. That
a
is a mix.
House, that's for sure.
Your poor daughters, they're outnumbered. You got to even it out. You need three more girls now. All right?
No, I know. That would be great.
All right. Hey, Paula, thanks. I'm just messing with you. James, I got less than a minute or so. Some final thoughts. You heard her. I mean, hey, boys will be boys, girls will be girls. It'll work out. But let me have your final thoughts.
No, I mean, the transition from a boy to a man, the formation from a boy to a man requires a strong family and a strong faith. And we can see what happens in families that don't have fathers in urban areas where the crime is up, the kids become lost. And part of this has to do with gender, and it has to do with understanding gender. And obviously we have to have compassion for children who have confusion. But that compassion is misplaced when we have individuals who are trying to instill confusion and individuals who want to use drugs to block the natural course of development. And I'm talking about puberty blockers, which are now being advocated in a segment of the medical community. It's monstrous. And so, yeah, it's at the end of the day, it's family, it's faith, it's freedom. And that's what we have to instill in our boys and in our girls. And we have to approach it with compassion and, of course, with equal opportunity. But this this gender confusion agenda has a dark undercurrent. Its foundations have nothing to do with righteousness or goodness.
James, thanks for being here with me. Always great to have you. You can follow James at his website. That's easy to follow. James Hirsen, HIRSEN.com, or on Twitter at the Jim Jams. Short pause. I'm going to be back with more. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
All things current. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, here's the latest when it comes to vaccines and mandates. As you know, they continue to divide our country. This weekend, Southwest Airlines suddenly cut 1,800 flights from its schedule. You know, initially it was blamed on weather or some kind of air traffic control problem. No other airline had weather issues. FDA said, hey, we don't have any problems with air, you know, with the air traffic control system. The speculation was that there was a sudden staffing shortage because of pilots and other employees not being vaccinated. So, you know, it was bizarre. If you saw 1,800 flights, my heart goes out to anybody who was trying to go see their loved one or be there for the wedding or the funeral or, you know, the business interview or whatever it might be. I mean, it's when your flight gets canceled, it's tough. And, you know, if it gets canceled due to weather or something beyond their control, you know, a lot of times there's no, you don't get compensated, you don't get put up in a hotel room, you don't get your flight changed. So they came out saying, oh, yeah, it's weather, it's air traffic control. But I don't think it was. I think it was due to, and I think the speculation is right, that there was a staffing shortage because pilots and other employees aren't vaccinated. Some people just don't want to get it. But most airlines are federal government contractors, and all of their employees have to comply with the federal vaccine mandate, and they have to do that by November the 24th. That's a deadline, the day before Thanksgiving. You have to comply or, you know, there's going to be some trouble. So if it ends up that the employees who refuse to get the vaccine get fired after the deadline, well, it could mean some really serious travel disruptions for the holiday season. So if you've got plans to visit your family, Thanksgiving, day after, maybe Christmas, I'm just throwing that on your radar. I'm just following the news and doing a little speculation for you. But here's what the president had to say about this recently. President Biden said this, and I'll quote him. He said, quote, let's be clear. When you see headlines and reports of mass firings and hundreds of people losing their jobs, look at the bigger story. I've spoken with Scott Kirby, CEO of United Airlines, who's here today. United went from 59% of their employees to 99% of their employees in less than 2 months after implementing the required the requirement. He said 99%. So the president wants everybody vaccinated. He's going to mandate businesses. We've talked about this in the past. Get vaccinated. And a lot of people will either comply or they will lose their job. Meanwhile, several student athletes at Western Michigan University, they won. They won a preliminary round in federal court. They sued the school because they were told, hey, if you don't have your shots, you can't compete. You're not going to be able to play anymore. So the students all applied for religious exemptions. They were turned down. And that's kind of in a minute, Terrence McKeegan is going to stop by. He's a very gifted attorney. I want his take on this as well. These religious exemptions, what's the criteria for them? Because I'm hearing more and more people who want to apply for them get rejected. So are they being respected? It's an important question. The students applied for the exemption. They were said, nah, district court put an injunction on the school's action, and the school, of course, appealed that injunction to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, and a unanimous three-judge panel upheld the injunction, so the athletes should be able to compete for a time being. And then I heard one other story here, too, and you can join me, too, anytime you want. 888-914-9149. In Los Angeles County, the sheriff says, you know what? I'm not going to enforce the vaccine mandate in place here. He says if he did, he would risk losing up to 10% or more of his workforce. So you see how this is now playing out. We'll see what happens. Boosters, are they next? You might have gotten your two shots already and said, okay, I took one for the team or I did it, but I really don't want the booster. I don't want another dose of the vaccine. Where does the line get drawn? You know, we have to get your two shots to comply, and what happens to 2 months, 6 months, 8 months from now? Our number here, if you want to get in, 888-914-9149. I'm joined right now by Terrence McKeegan. He's been with us several times. I enjoy tapping into his expertise and his knowledge. He practiced law all over the world, actually served for a time as a lawyer for the Holy See's mission to the United Nations in New York, and you can find him at TerrenceMcKeeganLaw.com or healthcarecivilrights.org. It's good to have him back. Hey, Terry, good afternoon. Appreciate you being back.
Thanks, Drew.
So what do you make of what we are seeing? How much more disruption to our economy are we going to see if these mandates continue to be put in place? And the whole, you know, Southwest thing, I don't know, could have been weather, could have been air traffic control. 1,800 flights, though, seem more than unusual to me. And you see the impact that had on passengers, and we see the impact that everything's having on the economy. Give me your take now on what you're seeing now that the mandates have been put into place and the deadline is now looming.
Sure. Well, again, I always like to take a step back and look at the bigger picture, because we can get consumed with the 24-hour news cycle. And, you know, also we can quickly forget just how much things have changed and how much the story and the narrative on COVID has changed in the last few months. And so, you know, looking at the bigger picture, I think we have to look at the fact that most people now understand that there's something just a little bit off with not just the response to COVID-19, but just maybe the entire narrative around COVID-19, in the sense that, you know, the official narrative seems to change every few weeks, and the goalposts keep moving, you know, further and further away. And it's sort of like in Peanuts, where Lucy, you know, pulls the football out from, you know, just at the last second. And so, you know, I think the last thing that the elites and the media want us to do is to connect the dots. But if we don't connect the dots, I don't think we can make sense of what's going on. And having worked in international public policy and at the UN and on the ground in many countries, I can tell you that well before COVID, the global elites always wanted to have a global economy, but also a global order that was fairly homogenous. You know, we can also look at the World Economic Forum and what they've been up to in the last year or so. And last June, when they gathered, they had a lot of the political elites, the business leaders, all get together and say, we need a great reset. And by a great reset, they meant that they wanted to fundamentally transform every aspect of society, but especially the global financial world. And when you realize that you have to have a crash before you have a reset, then maybe all the things we're coming to see happening now as far as shortages and fuel and all these disruptions in the supply chains and the fact that now we have shortages in the hospital industry and all these other industries like the airline industry, I think that's where we have to start looking at. You know, these things do not happen accidentally, but they could be part of a larger scheme.
Boy, that's fascinating. So you think that, and I'm not a big conspiracist, to be honest with you, but it is so strange. And again, I'm just I'm just thinking out loud here. What we have seen, you know, there have been other, you know, health issues that have, you know, manifested, but we haven't had a pandemic in 100 years. But boy, I mean, there has been overdrive in terms of not just trying to get a handle on it. I mean, we had Operation Warp Speed. We have all these different vaccines. So now we're seeing, you know, the numbers begin to go back down, and there is this hyper push to have people vaccinated. And I thought to myself, okay, we're seeing a diminishment in efficacy. You're going to need boosters. There's a number of other things that are playing in here. And I'm thinking, is there something more to the picture than meets the eye? I mean, why would the president issue these particular mandates? We see the laws in different states and the way people are conducting themselves. Do you think it plays a role that this hard push is part of this great reset, that this was, and I don't know, I hate to even go down this road, premeditated, that this, you know, the COVID-19 vaccine somehow got out accidentally out of a Wuhan lab, and those elites you speak of are now utilizing this, or maybe it was even more nefarious than that, and you know, it was released and deliberately spread in an effort to gain control. And again, I'm just throwing this out because you brought it up. I'm not saying that that's the case. I'm curious as to your thoughts on this reset and what we're seeing. Yeah, because I was saying to my wife the other day, man, they are pushing so hard. They're pushing so hard. But we know the survival rate on this is pretty high in a lot of respects. And a lot of people have been vaccinated. How many Americans today have been vaccinated? I'm not even sure, but you're talking millions of them, tens of millions, if not more. But your thoughts?
Yeah, well, again, I think what I said about moving the goalposts, we can have a short memory because so many things happen. And, you know, the news moves on to the next story. But just a few months ago, President Biden promised everyone that there would be more of a return to normal once the country was, I think, 70 to 75% vaccinated. Yeah. And then, of course, when we reached that point, the goalpost got moved to now it seems to be 98 or 99%.
Right.
Well, I can just tell you that a practical and logistical matter, there's no way to get to 99%. That's just completely impractical. And then you wonder, well, why are they proposing something impractical? Mm-hmm. Because, again, I think we have to look at the elites. And, you know, I spent my time fighting the elites at the UN on the ground, going against WHO and health ministers. And a good way to think about this for the listeners is that all the things that we've been fighting in the culture of death, you know, on abortion,
right,
on sterilization, on, you know, all the family issues, all the same people that have been pushing the culture of death in those areas are also running the show on COVID-19. And so if we again connect the dots, we realize that if these elites have no problem with not only killing unborn babies, but getting us to pay for that to be done, are they really going to be beyond implementing a plan to essentially turn us into socialist or communist countries?
Now that can sound
extreme, but I think we also need to look at the greatest private revelation we have in the last 100 plus years, which is Our Lady of Fatima.
Yeah.
And, you know, not only did Our Lady of Fatima talk about the errors of Russia spreading throughout the world, if there was not a conversion of heart, but there's a very specific message that was conveyed to Sister Lucia, that if Russia was not consecrated to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, that in fact communism would spread to every country of the world. And certainly not many people are talking about communism, you know, here in the U.S. or in Canada or in Australia, but I would argue that what is going on under the pretext of COVID-19 is a quick descent into communism and socialism.
Yeah, I have to take a short pause. When we come back, I want to share something that a friend of mine sent to me about something that was said years ago about how the U.S. would ultimately head down this path towards socialism and communism. My guest today, Terrence McKeegan. If you want to join us when I come back, I'll go to the phones. Our number is 888-914-9149. In terms of vaccination, 402 million doses have been given, 178 million Americans vaccinated.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
I'm a fan of yours. I listen to your replay at night on the Relevant Radio app.
It's the Drew Mariani Show.
Working graveyard as a mail handler.
On Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I love that. Hey, thank you for listening. You can catch up on anything you missed the show or podcast or simply by going to relevantradio.com and doing a search for this show. You'll find my show. You can stream it. You can download it. You can share it with others. I think we're on Spotify and a lot of other places as well. But check it out and share the show with others. If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with a very gifted attorney. We were talking about mandates. His name's Terrence McKeegan. And we saw 1,800 flights canceled by Southwest Air. Some people believe it's because some of the pilots, some of the crew didn't want to be vaccinated. We're seeing a lot of other institutions now having to comply by the day before Thanksgiving. And my guest was talking about something called the Great Reset. And I saw a poll not too long ago. I think it was about a week or two ago, maybe last month. I was sharing a poll that was done by CNN. It said 56% of Americans believe that our democracy is under attack. You know, and I don't know whether that's the case. Clearly, communism has been trying to subvert our democracy for a long time. If you know your history, you know about the Red Scare of the 1950s with Senator Joe McCarthy. And you just take a look at what's happening. Ronald Reagan was not a sympathizer, back in, I don't want to go too off track here, but basically, he told Orange County Press Club one time, he said 3 months before his last visit to this country, Nikita Khrushchev said this. He said this. I want to quote it. Quote, we can't expect the American people to jump from capitalism to communism, but we can assist their elected leaders in giving them small doses of socialism until they awake and one day find themselves having communism. That is a frightening thought, isn't it? And you take a look at the left wing of the Democratic Party, and clearly they're progressive. They want these socialistic ideologies in there. Is it possible that COVID, with the shutdowns, with the mandates, with the bailouts, with the universal basic income, with a lot of this, is leading us down that path? I had Dr. Paul Kangaroo on that week, and I shared with him something that a friend gave me. This supposedly came from Khrushchev. He was giving a talk. I don't know whether this was 59 or when he made this prediction, but let me just share with you very quickly what he said. He says, your children and children will live under communism. You Americans are so gullible. No, you won't accept communism outright, but we'll keep feeding you small doses of socialism till you finally wake up and you already have communism. We won't have to fight you. We'll weaken your economy until you fall like overripe fruit into our hands. Democracy will cease to exist when you take away from those who are willing to work and give to those who would not. And then he says, remember, socialism leads to communism. So how do you create a socialistic state? They say there's 8 levels. 1, health care. You control the health care, you control the people. 2, poverty. Increase the poverty level as high as possible so poor people are easier to control and they won't fight back. Provide for them everything. 3, debt. Increase the debt to an unsustainable level. We're knocking on $30 trillion worth of national debt, and we have this bill where we want to get into another $3.5, $5.4 trillion worth of national debt. That scares the heck out of me. Gun control. Remove the ability for them to defend themselves. You saw what happened down in Australia. Welfare. Take control of every aspect, food, housing, and income of their lives, because that will make them fully dependent on the government. 6, education. Take control of what people read and listen to, and take control of what the children learn in school. 7, religion. Remove the belief in God from the government and schools, because the people need to believe only in the government, and having the government know what's best for them. And finally, class warfare. Divide people in the wealthy and the poor. Eliminate the middle class. This will cause more discontent, and it'll be easier to tax the wealthy with the support of the poor. That is kind of frightening. If you look at where we are and how we fit into that picture. Hey, Terrence, welcome back. It's good to have you with me. What do you make of that? That was a That was actually said and predicted by Khrushchev. I don't know whether we are knocking on that door or not, but we are at a place in America that I've never seen before. And a lot of what was just laid out, it seems to be the beginning. It seems to be in just the very beginning to take place. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I love the Khrushchev quotes, and I had heard them before. And I think there was a period of time after the late 1950s, and you mentioned Joe McCarthy. After that kind of died down, what's very interesting is that starting in the early 60s, up until Reagan comes along in the 80s, there's really not a lot of emphasis on communism or on potential communist infiltration or growth in the world. And, we also have to look at the church. Going into Vatican II, they spent about 2 years writing the schemas, the preparatory drafts that were going to be used for Vatican II. And one of those that was prepared was on communism. And, a little known story is that essentially when Vatican II opened and early on, the original schemas were thrown out for new schemas, there was a deal that was cut between the Vatican and Moscow to not have a document on communism in exchange for observers from the Russian Orthodox Church to participate at Vatican II. I would argue that was a pretty bad trade-off, but it seems like, going back a few decades in the church, the dominant foreign policy has been what we call Ostpolitik. Yeah. Now, this is sort of this openness to the East, and where there seemed to be less of a hard line against communism and authoritarian regimes. We see it even more clearly today in the secret deal between the Vatican and the communist Chinese government that we still don't know the details on, although there has been some reportage that there is a lot of money involved going from Beijing to Rome. And so we have to put all this in perspective that, I think people were kind of lulled into this false sense of security that communism, other than in a few countries, had sort of disappeared.
I could not agree with you more. And to your earlier point, we only have a moment or two left here. I think Our Lady of Fatima, as you point out, in 1917, when she appeared, and we'll be celebrating the great miracle of the sun in just 2 days here, the anniversary of that day, gave us the solution for the problems we face today. And that is to pray the rosary, right? To pray for the conversion of Russia, to pray against the spread of atheistic communism. It's not too late to do that. We need to pray for China. We need to pray for Russia. We need to pray for so many of these other nations as well. And let me put a quick plug in here for Father Rocky, who prays the rosary every night at 7 p.m. Central Time. And I hope you'll join him for that. Make that one of your intentions, and let's pray for our country, and let's pray for the conversion of so many of those other nations around the world. Hey, Terrence, I got to hold it right there just simply because I'm out of time. My apologies to everybody on hold. I wish I had another hour with you. Time goes so quickly here, and we'll revisit this issue, I promise. My gratitude for your patience. People want to follow you. What's the best way to connect?
Healthcarecivilrights.org.
All right. And thank you for your time. We'll catch up again, okay? You and I have more time to talk. I'm looking forward to it. I always enjoy having you here.
Thank you.
You got it. That's Terrence McKeegan. And say a prayer for him as well. I'm out of time for the day. Please say a prayer for me right now if you could. I have a very special intention. My wife and I are praying for it right now. And if you could say Hail Mary for me or an Our Father, just ask God for his mercy. I'd appreciate it. I'll be back again tomorrow to give you another look at life you won't find anywhere else. Until then, remember God loves you, and so do I. Have a great day.